the Radio Ranch in the heart of Liberty, Texas, that is. It's the Bombastic Blogcast for Tuesday, April the 9th, 2024. I'm the G-Man, Dan Gallo.
Hey, G-Man.
You're yourself. Defender of the peace, keeper of the justice, purveyor of truth, and one heck of a nice guy. Let's get this thing started officially with
the Daily Datagram.
You got it. Words of wisdom, words of inspiration, brain droppings, or noggin nuggets. You get to make the call. Good one here. It says, and oh, by the way, this is from Dave Barry. I don't know if you ever read Dave Barry, but the man's incredibly funny. And this is from him. It says, I argue very well. Ask any of my remaining friends. I can win an argument on any topic against any opponent. People know this and steer clear of me at parties. Often as a sign of their great respect, they don't even invite me. Yeah, but at least I'm the winner.
Who are you?
Let's move along now to the so-called educational part of the blogcast. Here we go.
Twisted history. Gather around, kids, because a lot of things happen on this day throughout history.
It's one day.
Some cool, some not so cool. Just the same, you need to know your twisted history.
Okey-doke.
You might be quizzed.
Well, kids, it was on this day in 1967, the first Boeing 737, a 100 series, made its maiden flight. And the door stayed on, there were no problems with the software, and the plane went on to serve a long term of service. Just wanted you to know that. And let's see here, it was on this day in 2017, after refusing to give up his seat on an overbooked United Express flight, Dr. David Dao Doi An was forcibly dragged off the flight by aviation security officers, leading to major criticism of United Airlines, which, of course, United Airlines continues to enjoy to this day.
Well, do you take a chance getting up in the morning, crossing the street, or sticking your face in a fan?
Of course, yesterday the big news was the haul of $50.5 million Saturday night in a fundraiser that Donald Trump's campaign held in Florida with a bunch of hedge fund billionaires. And it's really interesting how now these billionaires are all lining up behind Trump when a couple of years ago they were lining up behind Biden. And I'm trying to figure out, what is this fascination with Democrats? Democrats have done nothing but crap on the nation, crap on people like you and me, and yet people still want to vote for Democrats. All of your Hollywood elites are all Democrats. And they wear that D with pride. And I'm like, what the hell is the matter with these people? They're all brain damaged. They've got to be brain damaged. They can't possibly understand what the hell is going on in the world today. Surely they understand things like the price of gas because they have to buy gas. They buy groceries, right? No, it's just that they're rich enough to afford the destruction of this country. The rest of us, though, we're not that rich. We can't afford the destruction of our country. Nor would we allow it to happen, which is why we are the kind of people we are. Well, the Democrat Party is really hurting. I believe the term is butthurt over this haul that Donald Trump made Saturday night at $50.5 million. And this is just the beginning. There's going to be a lot more money raised between now and November 5th, to be sure. But I want to play for you something that showed up on X from the Biden campaign. Listen to this.
Folks, you know, Trump is down in Florida today raising money from a bunch of hedge fund billionaires who want him to cut Social Security and Medicare and their taxes. So I figure there's no better day than today to tell you that in the first quarter of this year, we raised $185 million. Our campaign now has 1.6 million individual donors, and more than 500,000 of those donors are brand new since 2020. This campaign is Scranton versus Palm Beach. This is a grassroots campaign of nurses and teachers and firefighters and cops versus Donald Trump and a couple billionaires looking for a tax cut. Real people who know the stakes of this election and are rolling up their sleeve to pitch in what they can. You're making a real difference, folks. Thank you. I appreciate everything you're doing. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
Man, Dr. Joseph Goebbels would be so proud. And lies about how they want Donald Trump to reduce Social Security. Trump's not going to do that. There's no way Trump would do that. Trump knows that that would be political suicide. Because I think already a guy like Trump, first of all, is the kind of a guy he is because of the way he thinks. And he's thinking, I have to leave the country in far better shape after my 4 years so that we can continue this work. So Trump, who is really the head of the Republican Party now, thank God that Ronna Romney McDaniel, because she's a Romney, is out of the picture now. Thank goodness. We can really set the country up for some real success for the next 4 to 8 years after Donald Trump's next term. And, of course, this is going to happen through only two primary areas, fundraising and getting the message out. And getting the message out is going to be done a lot easier when we have Donald Trump in office than it is when he's not in office. Because you do have the biased mainstream media. Mainstream media will never change their minds. As soon as Donald Trump gets back into the White House, I guarantee you the mainstream media is going to do nothing but badmouth Donald Trump 24/7. It will never let up. They're going to be out to destroy the man. They will be slandering him. And frankly, I think what he should do is when a network or a newspaper slanders him, tells lies about him, he should sue him. Sue him for slander. I believe in freedom of the press, but I also believe that if you utilize the freedom of the press in a negative way, you better be able to brace yourself against the reaction. It's like Newton's law. For every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. And anybody who insists on printing lies or broadcasting lies should be prepared to get sued. And I'd like to see this actually happen more and more in the future. Sue these people. So anyhow, Donald Trump is he's meeting with a lot of success. And when you consider all the people who are out to get him and all of the scams that are being formulated now to keep him from showing up on the ballot and how they're losing in that effort. I mean, you and I have a lot of reasons now at this moment to be very optimistic about what's going to happen November 5th. I think it's a good idea that we analyze the Democrat side of things in the wake of this successful fundraiser of President Trump's. And Cullen McHugh, writing in Trending Politics, had an interesting little op-ed where he said that Biden campaign communications director Michael Tyler erupted into a lengthy tirade where he smeared attendees of Donald Trump's $50 million Palm Beach fundraiser. And he smeared them by calling them billionaire scammers, extremists, and racists. Now, what does that tell you? I'll tell you what it tells me. It tells me that there are no more new tricks in that bag of tricks that the Democrats usually carry with them. It's the same old crap. They're scammers, they're extremists, they're racists, they're far-right white supremacists. Well, I think people are starting to learn now that that rhetoric, which has worked so well for so many years, is no longer the case. It's just not true. And this is the message. A minute ago, talking about getting the message out, get the messaging correctly. This is the first thing we have to do. We have to demonstrate, not just through propaganda, although that's a good place to start. We need to demonstrate in our day-to-day lives that we are not the scammers, extremists, and racists. I mean, look at the inroads that have been made in just the last couple of years with people of color. Let's use that term, people of color. And when I say that, I'm including whites, all right? We are all people of color. It's just a matter of what color you are. And I think that we have demonstrated in the last several years that we are color blind, we on the right. So anyhow, getting back to Cullen's article, he said just days after hailing their $26 million fundraiser in New York City, which was co-headlined by former Presidents Obama and Clinton at Radio City Music Hall, the Biden campaign has attacked Trump for holding his own exclusive fundraisers. And again, this is classic behavior on the part of those idiots on the left. They accuse us of doing the things they're doing all the time. And you know who used to do that? Who wrote, actually wrote the book on that was Dr. Joseph Goebbels, propaganda minister for the Nazis. The man was brilliant. He was as wrong-headed as a person could be, but he was brilliant. He was just an evil brilliant. That's all. So the campaign's official X account likewise referred to attendees, which included billionaire hedge fund managers John Paulson and Robert Mercer, oil executive Harold Hamm, hotel magnate Robert Bigelow, and casino mogul Steve Wynn as extremists and racists. Well, I happen to know a little bit about Steve Wynn, and he is the least racist person you would ever meet, and he's certainly not an extremist. So it's getting kind of obvious what the failings of the Democrat Party really are. And I think first and foremost, it's their failure to actually understand what reality is. They have lived in a fantasy world for so long, they wouldn't know reality if it kicked them in the crotch. So anyhow, this account that we were talking about, the Biden people posting on X, they wrote, "Tonight, Donald Trump is holding a billionaire fundraiser to pay his mounting legal bills. Here are some of the scammers, racists, and extremists funding Trump's failing campaign." And they just they continued in the post to slander attendees as science deniers, and an abundance of additional insults fell in right after that. It's ridiculous. So Tyler continued with the campaign's divisive rhetoric. During an appearance on MSNBC Sunday morning, I never watched MSNBC other than to watch a couple of clips, but he said, "I think it stands in stark contrast to the lack of fundraising that you see out of the Trump campaign." Lack of fundraising? Anyhow, he said, "He's down in Mar-a-Lago tonight with a bunch of billionaires, people like John Paulson, who not only wants to cut Social Security, but he's famous for, as a hedge funder, rooting against the American economy, betting against the American economy," which, by the way, is what George Soros does, and his son Alex. They do that all the time, and yet the Democrats are in bed with Soros. So what's coming out of this guy's mouth, Tyler's mouth here in this, is just a regurgitation of what they do on a daily basis. And he continued, "So I guess it's no surprise that he's investing in somebody like Donald Trump. He's ready for the economy to crash. But the whole lot of them is a bunch of billionaire scammers, extremists, and racists." This behavior is finally starting to catch up to the Democrats. And then elsewhere in that interview, Tyler attempted to portray Biden as a man of the people while claiming that former President Trump is controlled by billionaires and special interests. Again, same old tired line. And then quoting him, he says, "I mean, only Donald Trump in the span of a week could compare himself to both Nelson Mandela and Jesus Christ, which is about as self-centered as it gets. That's who Donald Trump is, though." And of course, who was Tyler talking to on MSNBC? None other than Al Sharpton, one of the best-known grifters in American history. And then he continued. He says, "I mean, the Jesus comparison, I'm not quite sure what scripture he's reading, because, you know, I've read Matthew 5, and nowhere in that does it say, 'Blessed are the bullies and the hateful.' It says, 'Blessed are the poor, the meek, and the hungry.' That scripture, those are the values that Joe Biden leads with every day." Really? Really? I mean, you know, if you're not slapping your forehead right now with the palm of your hand, there's something wrong. And despite the campaign's rhetoric, the majority of President Biden's campaign donations have come from big money donors. According to Federal Election Commission records, 35% of Biden's 2024 re-election campaign donations have come from big donors. or contributions greater than $2,000. Just 38% of the president's current campaign donations have come from small donors or contributions valued at between a dollar and $300. I'm sorry, $200. So why would anybody contribute? Anybody who's poor, why would they contribute to Biden's campaign? Biden has done nothing successfully in his 3+ years in office other than to make poor people poorer and middle class people poorer as well. And that's one group you don't ever want to piss off. The middle classers. Now, as for the Trump campaign, 61% of campaign funds have come from small donors, while just 9% have come from big donors. It's interesting to note here that between 2020 and 2024, Biden's total donations from big donors have increased by 10 percentage points, while the former president's numbers have decreased by the same margin. And yet, Donald Trump is pulling in the money. You might want to make note of that. I think it's safe to say that another reason Joe Biden is losing in his popularity contest with the American people is his conduct with Israel. And after U.S. pressure, the IDF, you know, the Israeli Defense Forces, announced back on Sunday that they'd withdrawn their forces from southern Gaza, following a demand from Biden last week for an immediate ceasefire. And then naturally, what does Hamas do? Well, they turn around and declare victory. Now, the decision coming on the day Israelis marked 6 months since the October 7th attack, it all came as a surprise. And as Israeli negotiators flew to Cairo for hostage negotiations, Hamas demanded a ceasefire before any new deal. Well, the IDF is going to leave one brigade in Gaza whose role is going to be to allow Israeli troops access to return as necessary. It's also going to carry out targeted operations such as the successful raid at Shifa Hospital last month. As the Jerusalem Post reported, the IDF on Sunday announced that it had concluded the active invasion stage of the war for now, while leaving open the possibility of a future new invasion of Rafah in deep southern Gaza. Although a top IDF official said that this change had nothing to do with U.S. pressure, the timing was unmistakable and coming right after the IDF's disastrous mistaken killing of 7 humanitarian aid workers last week. Now, that didn't go down very well. But Hamas immediately declared the IDF withdrawal, even partial, a victory for sticking to its position of demanding IDF withdrawals, including of troops in northern Gaza. Well, our friends at Breitbart reported, Biden demanded an immediate ceasefire in response to the accidental killing of those 7 World Central Kitchen aid workers last Tuesday when an IDF drone team mistook them for Hamas terrorists. Now, mistakes like this will be made, and these people who volunteer for programs like that understand this. I'm not using that as a defense. I'm just telling you what the overall posture of this situation is. Now, the incident was Hamas' greatest success in the war, to be sure. And there is evidence that the terrorists deliberately confused the IDF about the vehicles. Yes, they would do that sort of thing. Hamas uses human shields. They use human casualties as part of its asymmetric war strategy. And Biden's demand came after the U.S. had already allowed the United Nations Security Council to pass a resolution. And it angered me at the time. It still angers me. But it was a resolution that separated a ceasefire from a deal to return the remaining 130 or so Israeli hostages, adopting Hamas' core demand. But once again, when it comes to the United States, the United Nations will never vote in our favor. The United Nations really should be kicked out of that building on the East River in Manhattan, and they should be sent somewhere else in the world. The United Nations is not America's friend. Never really has been either. Now, the Biden administration had also opposed an Israeli operation in the town of Rafah. That's near the Egyptian border. And it was the last Hamas stronghold and the key to Israeli victory in the war. And Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu said in February that such an operation would end the war in weeks, not months. But Biden, that son of a basket, refused to support Israel, implying that the U.S. would curtail weapons and ammunition supplies if Israel disobeyed. Now, Biden appeared to be responding to electoral considerations, of course, after Muslim and Arab American voters in the key swing state of Michigan threatened not to support him, and young progressive voters sided with the Palestinians. Let me make something very clear here, and you need to understand this as a good conservative. If you continually placate the Muslims in Michigan over the fear that you're going to lose their vote, you are placing the safety of this country in peril. You cannot allow American Muslims to dictate American policy toward Israel or the Jewish people. You can't do it. How's this for a concept? Maybe the United States of America should start using the real definition between right and wrong as its guide when it comes to foreign policy. And I don't mean just with Israel. We need to reexamine this whole Ukraine thing, too. Again, goes back to Eisenhower. As he was leaving office, he said, "Beware the military-industrial complex." Well, my friend, those words were never more true than they are today. Now, just for the record, Israel also has other threats to worry about. Because we got Iran. They've been threatening a direct attack for days, having used its Hezbollah proxy in Lebanon to threaten Israel's northern region. And some IDF troops from Gaza are being moved north. At least they're security-minded in Israel. The prospect of losing U.S. support and ammunition on the eve of a potential war in the north, which would be much more intense than the Gaza conflict, to be sure, is also a likely motivation for Israel to comply with Biden's posture. But the Israeli public may not accept the government's decision. Israelis want the Gaza mission completed. And, I mean, why wouldn't they? The Israeli people are concerned for their own safety. They want this mission completed. And in order to adequately complete it, I don't know that that's the right word, adequately, but in order to definitively and adequately complete it, you must wipe out Hamas. There is nothing good about Hamas. They're a bunch of political opportunists. That's what they are. People grasping for power. Gee, who does that remind you of? Democrats, Democrats. So, only a successful hostage deal may placate critics. Because domestic pressure on the Netanyahu government is growing. There's one additional consideration. The U.S. elections in November. Israel may have decided its best chance to defeat its enemies will come with change in the White House, given Biden's growing, perhaps permanent, hostility. Because that's what it is. It's hostility that Biden is showing toward not just Israel, but Benjamin Netanyahu. Now, why would Biden be hostile toward him? Because, and here again, this reinforces the theory that I first expounded upon years ago, and that is Joe Biden has a boss, and his name is Barack Obama. Do you remember when Obama was president and Benjamin Netanyahu visited the states? And when he left the White House, he was escorted out the White House back door past the dumpster. Do you remember that? There was a photo published on that. That was Obama. Gee, isn't it funny how Joe Biden's posture toward Israel and Netanyahu is a mirror image of Obama's? It's not a coincidence, my friend. And you got to love Pat Sajak. There's a guy with a great career. He's also a good conservative right there in that den of iniquity, known for all of the liberals. You got this good conservative, smart guy, Pat Sajak. You know, he's going to be moving into Michigan. He's going to be working for Hillsdale College. But he did 41 seasons of Wheel of Fortune. Man, 41 years. Now, it was back in September of 22, he surpassed Bob Barker as the longest-running host of any game show, having helmed the show for 40 years at that point. So it wasn't long after that Sajak announced his planned exit. And just quoting him, he says, "Well, the time's come. I've decided our 41st season, which begins in September, will be my last. It's been a wonderful ride, and I'll have more to say in the coming months. Many thanks to you all. If nothing else, it'll keep the clickbait sites busy." Well, that's true. Now, he hosted a syndicated version of the show and also a daytime edition for NBC between 1981 and 89. One thing they don't mention is for a very short time, he had a late night show on CBS, and it was a good show. He was a great late night talk show host. But for some reason, CBS didn't like it. And it wasn't because the ratings were bad, because they weren't. So he's retiring roughly 3 years after the death of Jeopardy host Alex Trebek. So this marks an official end to what you'd call a sprawling era, right? A long-running era. And the departure does come after a lot of due recognition, too. He's been nominated for 23 Daytime Emmy Awards, winning three of them, as well as earning a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. He's being honored with a Lifetime Achievement Award at the 2011 Daytime Emmy Awards. And he's been honored with a Lifetime Achievement Award at the 2011 Daytime Emmy Awards. And a week after Sajak's news was released last year, it was announced that Ryan Seacrest would be taking over as host in season 42. I was kind of holding out hope that maybe they would make Vanna White the new host of the show. But some things never change in Hollywood. To the Comedy Corner with Don McInerney.
People say that all the time. I'm just saying. It's an annoying thing. I'm just saying. Yeah, there's just the two of us. And I didn't say it. And as you know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? Have I stopped you at any point along this conversation and said to you, "I really am confused about what it is you're saying. Could you please reword it some other way so maybe I get the gist?" Then there's the one, "It goes without saying." You ever hear people say that? That's annoying, because the people that say that, those kind of people, they're not going without saying. They're gonna say. My only hope is that I get away, I go before they say anything. My mechanic has a great expression, more than fair. More than fair. That's what. If I argue about a bill with him, he'll say, "We charge you a price we think is more than fair." What does that mean? He figured out what was fair and then charged me more. Yeah, we figured $75 was fair. We charge you $150. We're being twice as fair. I'm just saying. Things are a lot different. I'm getting old. One thing I learned, here's something I learned about getting old that I've realized recently. And if you're my age out there, you'll back me up on this. Even as you get older, in your head, you're not old. In your head, you don't get old. In your head, you're still like 20, 25 years old. It's kind of amazing. But there are things during the day that remind you that you're old, like things like standing up. And then having to sit down because you stood up too fast. And then all the blood rushes to your head, and you go, "Oh, am I going to die?" No, okay. That's the most exciting part of my day. You know what else makes me feel old? Like a 30-year-old calling me sir. "Excuse me, sir. Excuse me, sir. Hey, drop dead, kid." Filling out a form online makes you feel old, you know, because you put your name and your address and your phone number, then you get to your birthday, put the day and the month, and then you got to scroll. An hour and a half later, I'm taking a nap in between. Also, mirrors are the worst. Mirrors are the virtual reminder that you're old, because you're walking around in your head, you're 20 years old, all of a sudden you see yourself in the mirror, you go, oh, excuse me, sir. Some things confuse me. Like, I saw a headline about the census, and said that 42% of Americans didn't fill out the census. Now, how do they know that?
That's it. Make it a terrific Tuesday. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you on tomorrow's bombastic blogcast. Remember, no such thing as spare change, free lunch, or too much horsepower. And you be sure to take some time today just to thank the good Lord that you're an American.
You mean that's it?
See you tomorrow, G-Man.